by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, Drew Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. Hunting is full swing, Janet. We have talked all summer long about how we're ready to go. And last spring, we had Brandon Werner on because it was very important for us to update people on the level that the turkey population in Casper had really spread. And there was a time when some of those turkeys had to be removed, so I thought we should get an update with Brandon and really figure out how things have been going all summer long with the turkey here in Casper.
You know, it's been an exciting year for sure with the turkeys. And as you may recall, we were able to trap and relocate about 160 turkeys somewhere in there last spring, which was fantastic. And that was right out of, you know, kind of the middle of town. And we kind of think of like the Dean Morgan area down through Walcott, kind of those big tree areas as well as some other places. But we were able to, you know, safely trap, drop a net on top of them and relocate them to some other areas where they get to be turkeys again and not trying to figure out where to cross the street.
And it was fun to watch how it's done because you watch the whole process, the net drop, then they're crated up and they're carefully taken out to an area and then they're released. So it's very humane. It's very, a common thing that's happened. And I just saw that the latest group of generation of turkeys has made its way onto the streets of Casper. And it seems like the numbers are getting big again, Brandon.
Yeah, absolutely. So going back to the trapping, so like we talked about, we relocated those birds and actually just talked to a sportsman that was in the field today, and he saw one of our birds. We knew it was one of ours because it had a band on it with four little chicks. So even though they were town birds, we put them out in the county, and they're running around doing their thing. But every August, we'll drive around town, we'll drive around the county, we do turkey classifications. So we're looking at toms, hens, poults, and everything like that. And we get our brood per hen data. And the brood per hen data is a really good indicator of how the population's doing. So if you have one hen that has two poults, you're about maintaining your population. Anything more than that, we're growing. We are about 3.6 poults per brood this year. So we're still increasing. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. But what's pretty cool right now is turkeys kind of migrate in our countries, like we've talked about before. So the spring, they really spread out. They did their mating thing. Now they got all the little ones running around. So we have birds all the way up in the mountains to down in the river bottoms and everywhere in between.
The turkey health and the turkey population around Wyoming is really strong. I mean, you're not going to go very far in the Casper area without seeing some sign of turkey.
I would say that the Black Hills has the biggest population in the state, and then we're probably number two in Natrona and Converse County, and then over in the Bighorn Basin. But it just seems like with the mild winter we had, with just the right amount of precipitation, and we didn't really have like that late, really wet, heavy snow that we usually get in May, that it was just perfect conditions to grow turkeys this year.
So do we think, since we're to that point of the year where you've done the counts and everything, that when spring rolls around, if we don't have too cold of a winter or too snowy of a winter, that the population and health will be really stronger than ever come springtime?
I'd say more or less towards winter. So wintertime is really when these birds kind of come down out of the mountains from snow and everything. Then they get in these big wintering flocks. So I kind of do anticipate, you know, if we kind of thought we had a lot of turkeys in the past, even though we relocated quite a few, we're going to see a lot of birds this winter. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that.
I would like to point out, Drew, that we seem to see a lot of birds in the winter, but I never seem to see them during hunting season. So, you know, I would really like Brandon to work on that part of it, that we don't need them downtown on the crosswalks. We do need them where my kids can find a turkey in the spring.
Yeah. And well, speaking of even the fall, you know, the hunting seasons are open for archery, and then they will be for firearm come October. But, you know, people are still kind of feeding those birds. And really, that's one of the major causes that we have of complaints and issues with these birds.
And that's right, Drew. You know, we're kind of talking about the wild turkey population, and a lot of the things that we, you know, have joked about over the years, quote unquote, because there was a fantastic Facebook page for Thomas Gobbles, and a lot of people followed that particular turkey. And now we have all of his fantastic offspring littered throughout Casper. You know, these animals are wild animals, and turkeys in particular do cause a lot of damage. And so while we make light of this, it is actually a very serious issue. It's serious for disease issues. It's serious for property damage issues. It is serious for public safety issues. You know, those of us who have almost been rear-ended because we're stopping for the turkeys that are crossing the street, we do understand that this can be an issue. And unfortunately, sometimes, you know, these birds are getting hit by cars. Sometimes Game and Fish does have to use lethal removal to, you know, help prevent damage to property. A lot of people are very irritated with the level of destruction and damage that these wild turkeys can do to their property here in town, right? And we're not talking about a big ranch in the middle of nowhere. We are talking about little cottages under really great, wonderful trees downtown that just get destroyed. And those folks, you know, we do encourage folks not to feed. There is a feeding ban in the town of Casper, and it is illegal to do that. And a lot of times you'll be seeing those turkeys around places where people are feeding them.
So if this continues, if people still will feed, they'll still cause the issues, what can actually be done? I mean, Brandon, we've already reduced the number by 160. Do we go bigger next time, or what's the plan to, you know, really corral these birds?
There's a lot of things that goes into trapping and relocating. Again, we have to think about the disease issues, right? So over the last several years, we've really had a lot of avian influenza. And so we have to watch that very carefully. And so that does put a damper on where we are able to relocate those birds to. And so that is something that, you know, I know a lot of people think, gosh, it's just easy. You trap them, you move them, not a big deal. But that is absolutely not the case. A lot more goes into it.
Yeah, and I'd like to touch base because just like Janet said, easy to trap and relocate. That's not the case at all. There's only certain times a year we can do it. So we don't really want to be trapping in the spring or even early summer because we have the hens with their little poults running around, and we don't want to catch a couple of them and not all of them. But the most important thing is in the summertime, it's really hot, right? And if we catch these turkeys, we put them in cardboard boxes. They do not thermoregulate very well. So they could overheat in the box before we take them anywhere. So that's why trapping in the winter is a really good option. I like to tell people that are having birds show up on their property, causing damage, there's a little water gel gun is what they're called. So they're like a little air rifle thing that just shoots little gel BBs, and it's enough just to kind of haze them around when they show up.
Oh.
Yeah. It works really well, and it's water, so it goes back into the ground.
So then it doesn't hurt them and just kind of keeps them away. Because if that happens once or twice, they're going to be like, whoa, we don't want to be there.
Yeah, it just pestures them just a little bit. That I've talked with several landowners that they just walk out of the house with this little airsoft looking thing. And they're just like, oh, I better get out of here.
Yeah. And
I trained my cat to respond to the squirt bottle. So turns out turkeys maybe can be trained too. But of course, while that might be fantastic for you as a homeowner, it might just be pushing the issue next door to your neighbor. So keep that in mind too, that you know, as long as they're around, chances are there's damage.
And remember the fact they're wild. These aren't tame. And just because you may train your cat with a water bottle doesn't mean you're training turkeys. But still, they're wild animals. And, you know, this time of year is fall turkey season. So we talked about that a little bit, Brandon. And let's touch on that a little bit, because obviously if you go out and hunt, that kind of reduces some of the birds from the county. but you can't hunt those things in town, just so the people are clear.
At this time.
Right. Yeah. You're not allowed to hunt them in town per city ordinance. But yeah, in the county. So right now, like I talked about, the birds are pretty well distributed. So September is a really good time to get out there. It's only archery season for the month of September. And then moving into October 1st through December 31st, it's regular season where you can use a shotgun or a rifle.
So it really, turkey season is a long season during the fall, starting September 1st and ending the end of the year. So, you know, if you don't get your elk and your season's gone, maybe you turn to turkey hunting. And how often can you actually get a license for hunting turkey?
You can actually buy 3 turkey licenses. So you can buy 1 general turkey license and 2 area 1 type 3 licenses, which are really county specific. So make sure you pay attention to that. But Natrona and Converse County, you are allowed to hunt on the area 1 type 3 license.
So that really is kind of a game changer if you're looking to hunt. But obviously, you know, access is another thing that people need to be worried about, because if you're on public land 1 second, you could be crossing a boundary and really get yourself in trouble. So knowing where you're at, you know, the Onyx maps, I have mine tuned up, and it really has become the game changer that we've kind of needed.
Absolutely. A game changer, both positive and negative. And so, you know, keeping that information on you is absolutely critical while you're in the field, and it's not too expensive, and would recommend that for everyone, not just for knowing if you're on public or private land, but also just to help people know where you are for safety reasons. Dropping some pins, making sure everything that you're doing is accurate is fantastic.
Make sure you get out, make sure you're being safe, and make sure you're enjoying the outdoors. And of course, you can find out more about the hunt, the turkey seasons in the Hunt Planner, which is at the wgfd.wild.gov website.
Absolutely, Drew. And don't forget, a wild turkey is a fantastic Thanksgiving.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, Janet, because I love wild turkey, but some people have issues when it comes to cooking. And Brandon, I know you put your apron on, you got your chef's hat all the time, and you like it.
I really do. And just like you brought up, a lot of people do not like wild turkey. And I feel like that's because they don't know how to cook it, but it's really awesome. So if I shoot like a younger bird or something like that, I will pluck the whole thing. And it's really not that hard to pluck. And when you leave that skin on it, it really seals in the moisture, because you can really dry out a turkey super fast. So if I have a whole turkey, especially a young one, I'll deep fry it. Everyone loves a good deep fried wild turkey. Yeah. Or you can put it in a roaster and just let it sit there for 10, 12 hours and fill it full of seasonings and everything like that. Some people will smoke it, but I do recommend if you smoke it, to soak it in like a salt brine. And there's a lot of great recipes online that salt brine really locks in that moisture. It's really good. I'd say probably most people, they'll breast it out and then cut the breast into little 1-inch by 1-inch chunks and just pan fry it or deep fry it and get good old turkey nuggets. But if you brine it just a little bit with that too, the moisture is awesome. One thing that people tend to throw away on turkeys, I think is a huge shame, is the legs and thighs. So the legs and thighs, I mean, a turkey walks around most of their day, so they're tough. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
So true.
But if you got a crock pot or an Instapot, then you're in business. But I'm telling you what, if you put it in a crock pot, like 12 hours is the absolute minimum.
There are, Drew, and you can do the research online, such fantastic recipes out there, especially for the legs. One of the things that we love to do is we brine it for a very long time, just like you said, to get kind of that moisture in there. But then we smoke them. And then you lather it with a fantastic teriyaki-based barbecue sauce, and it really is money. And so don't forget, like, it just takes time sometimes with this wild game, whether it's to reduce the gamey flavor, whether it's to reduce the toughness, or whether it's just to infuse a little bit more flavor, it can be pretty fantastic.
And Brandon, you had mentioned that you always try to shoot the younger birds. What age limit or size are you really shooting for most times?
Well, like in the spring, I like to shoot a big tom. So a tom is typically like a 2-year-old plus bird. So like, you know, springtime I trophy hunt, but in the fall, I wouldn't say like I target younger ones, but if I happen to shoot one, because if you get in a group of them in the fall where you can shoot any wild turkey, it's a little tough sometimes to tell what's an adult and what's a juvenile. But you can tell pretty quick if you look online. There's ways, if you look at the wings, if it's an adult or juvenile, if they've shedded some of their, or molted some of their feathers out.
But again, regardless of what you get, Drew, don't forget crock pots, Instapots, taco seasoning, man, shredded. Turkey, wild turkey tacos is one of my family's favorite.
You know, one of my favorite is you brine it and then you put it in the crock pot and let it cook, cook, cook. And then you put it in dumplings.
Oh, that's awesome. I've never done that.
Oh, yeah. So just like you would do chicken and dumplings, you do it with the turkey and doing the legs and the thighs, that darker meat. Oh, gosh, it's really
so good. So do you do the dumplings in the crock pot at the same time, or do you transfer it to a different pot at that point?
Transfer to a different pot because you got to cook your dumplings first, and then you put it all together and let it all cook together.
Oh, that really reminds me, like, one of my favorite turkey leg meals is same deal, in a crock pot, leg and thigh. Meat just falls off, and they'll make a good gravy with some noodles and mashed potatoes, a little sweet corn in there.
Stroganoff type of thing.
Oh, yeah. That's turkey like meat. The turkey crap on a shingle right there, isn't it? Pretty close to what it is.
Yeah, it sounds like we're going to have a good weekend. Who's cooking first?
I know. I feel like going turkey hunting so I can start eating on Sunday football. Turkey and dumplings sound pretty good.
It does. You've got a good one there, Drew. We're going to try it.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew and Brian Woodward from Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And boy, Brian, it has been a busy September already. We're already just into the first week.
Oh, man, there is so much to do. And there's been so many people coming through here with every different, hunting scenario you can think of.
You know, one of the things that we started talking about in July is, you know what, if you're going to get a crossbow or you need to get your crossbow set up, you should do it in July so you have time to shoot. Mm-hmm. People didn't listen not one bit, did they?
No. In fact, I had a group of hunters in here yesterday that were from Minnesota, and the guy went to get his crossbow out of his case in his garage and hadn't shot it for a couple years, and the thing had blown up on him. And you know, he's in here going, I needed strings, I need to get this repaired, and my hunt starts in like 6 hours.
You know, we're miracle workers here at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, but you probably shouldn't have waited so long.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and unfortunately, I mean, things just happen, right? You might have been out practicing, whether it's your compound or, you know, maybe you dry fired it and you busted a limb or something that broke on it. I mean, unfortunately, we're in the middle of the season, and like these manufacturers that, you know, have access to get your bow repaired are just jammed up. They're backed up. And, you know, if you haven't had a string made for it at this point and had an extra one sitting in your case, you're going to be out of luck for a few weeks.
It's kind of interesting because in the Midwest, they haven't even started deer hunting. They won't start deer hunting until November.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess maybe if they're bow hunting, they get, you know, October or whatever. But right. When you come out here, we've been hunting for a month almost already.
Yeah, no. And again, we talk about it all the time. Just, you know, planning ahead is going to help make your hunt a lot more successful. But, you know, just simple things that you can do. Like, you know, if you're a compound bow shooter, you know, always have an extra string. You know, I mean, when you put one on, order another one. So you have a back up ready to go in case something were to happen.
We had shot ours a couple of weeks ago, and it had been 2 years probably since I'd even looked at mine. And I mean, it was off, and I didn't touch anything, but it just goes to show how, you know, moving it and bumping it, it'll just do that.
It's not always like riding a bike.
That's right. That's a long way down there if you're not used to shooting that. And we were talking about that a little bit earlier. You know, guys are making long shots, especially with the Ravens and the crossbows now. You got a little more distance and you got the scope that can help you out. But still, if you're not practicing those long shots, there's no way.
Yeah, and then, you know, once you throw a broadhead on it, you know, the broadhead's going to affect the travel of that bolt or that arrow. So it just, you know, to be successful, I mean, you got to be lucky at times. You got to be in the area with the right amount of elk, and you have to be prepared and ready for the shot. And you got to make sure that your equipment's geared up and ready to go.
You know, one of the things we talked a lot about is boots, and I made sure to start breaking my boots in a long time ago, got them ready to go, and started hitting the treadmill. And, you know, you don't even think about how different if you're a treadmill walker or a walker in shoes, running shoes or whatever, it's different in boots.
I was told by my son a long time ago, cardio is not a thing.
It is. Holy moly.
It is. You know, and I was lucky enough to get up on the mountain Sunday evening and walked a couple miles, you know, and when you're walking, you know, terrain's a lot different than just walking on a treadmill, right? I mean, you're up maybe doing a little bouldering up over some, you know, uneven ground and maybe through a creek bottom or whatever. It's important to have good shoes and good boots and make sure your socks are good and that, you know, everything is worn in because you don't want to end up with blisters on day one of the hunt.
Right. You know, one thing that we talked about a little bit is both of you and I have lost quite a bit of weight over the last year. And I put a pack on the other day that, you know, was like 50 pounds, and I was winded. I mean, it really knocked me out just from the fact that, you know, I'm not used to that anymore.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I wouldn't say I was winded, but, you know, when you're up there hiking, you kind of take a little different stance, or at least I do. You know, I'm trying to cover ground a little slower, you know, walking 20, 40, 50 yards, stopping, listening, you know, maybe blowing on a cow call, just trying to locate some animals, that kind of stuff. And so I'm trying not to, you know, get myself, you know, all, you know, heated up and sweaty and just trying to work my way into a hunting area that I want to get to a good sitting spot if that's what I'm going to do. So, but yeah, you know, you throw a pack on, all of a sudden you're like, boy, it's awful warm. It's hot. You know, then I realized that, you know, I really didn't need some of the equipment that I brought with me on this trip. You know, maybe I didn't need as much water, but being prepared is important.
So one thing that I noticed that really helps is trekking poles. You use those, and that helps you with that leverage, especially if you're on the rocky terrain where maybe you're not as balanced or whatever. Using that really will help out your back and help your legs.
Yeah, and I carry usually a set of trigger sticks with me. I just like hunting with those, especially if you're, you know, going to rest a gun or a crossbow on it. And you can kind of use that as a walking stick at times, but they're a little heavier and bulkier. So I tend to just strap that onto my pack when I'm walking. And then again, you know, just having one trigger stick or one walking stick, it makes a big difference.
And obviously you can come in here, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, and check out all the hunting gear and even fishing gear. And then once you get that kill, I've seen a lot of big elk that have been taken already. And, you know, they're going to have to get those ready to go to the freezer.
Yeah, and you know, this is the time of year where you really have to plan well because my understanding, some of the meat processing plants aren't quite open yet or not taking as many elk right now. So I know over the holiday weekend anyways, there were some guys going like, hey, where can I hang my animal? And when it's 70, 80, 90 degrees outside, you know, taking care of those animals and getting the skin off, the hides off of them, you know, it's important to get those things cooled down. But once you get them home, you know, if the processor's not open, you got to figure out what am I going to do to keep this thing iced down? And do I have enough cooler space or, you know, what are you going to do?
Right. Well, you can come in here and get it all taken care of because you can get coolers. And these, you know, the new age of coolers is not like your dad's, you know, styrofoam cooler. It's a big time, you know, keep stuff cold and keep it ready to go.
Well, we've talked about this before, but the cooler companies have solved the problem of needing to buy a cooler every couple of years.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
You buy a cooler now, they're a great rotomold cooler. They're going to hold the ice better, but you will never need to replace one ever unless it gets stolen or bounced out of the back of your truck somehow.
Yeah, and they have big warranties on them too most of the times.
All of them anymore, especially when you're looking at like Grizzly and Wild Gear, lifetime warranties on them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and we just don't see even having to use the warranty. I mean, warranties are great, but, you know, back in the day we were having problems with hinges or latches breaking or that kind of stuff. And we're not seeing any of that type of stuff even happening anymore. So I think for the most part, these companies have done a really good job of perfecting their trade and getting those coolers to a good point where they're not ever having to be replaced.
Definitely a great investment. Come on by and check them out here, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. Don't forget, you got to have your ORV tags. You have to have all your off-roading stickers and get everything ready for the state parks too, because that you don't want to get busted for that.
Yeah, duck stamps are another one. We have duck stamps in stock now. And then if you're going to hunt sage grouse, which I think is a kind of a short window, but Game and Fish is requiring a sage grouse permit. It's free, but you have to get online and have that in your possession also.
Get over here, check it out, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports and RockyMountainSports.com.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Hey, it's Drew and Brian back at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And Brian, we talked a lot about hunting here today, but fishing still on tap. And you actually got to take some police officers out and do some fishing.
Yeah, it was a great weekend. It was great to be able to provide a little service back to some of our servicemen. And fishing is always fishing, you know. I mean, there's some good days and bad days. And, you know, Pathfinder has definitely got its share of small fish. And we had a good day.
We, over the summer, obviously, the Wyoming Walleye Stampede, and saw different fish everywhere. And the last one was at Pathfinder. You've fished up there a couple times since. Mm-hmm. Have you seen pretty much the same type of action?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, there hasn't been a lot of real big fish being caught. You know, a few here and there. But it seems like guys just kind of stumble into them when they stumble into them, you know. I've heard good reports at Glendo, although they're still dropping the water at Glendo. It's, you know, down into the 20% percentile. But that fall bite down there is awful fun. And, you know, eventually you'll run into a bunch of crappie down there and kind of mix it up, give yourself a mixed bag. And then I talked to a gentleman that had been over at Boisen this week, and they had just a fantastic day over there. So I think, you know, if fishing is still your thing, I think as we get into the fall months, the fall bite, it can be great, and less people on the water for sure.
You know, I saw the other day at Glendo that someone was trying to get a little too close to the water and drove on the shore and mm-hmm. got stuck.
Yeah, you know, there's some rules that people need to be aware of, and one of the rules at Glendo is that you cannot launch from shore, and I think it's a $750 fine if you're launching a boat from shore. So stick to the boat ramps. Don't cause yourself thousands of dollars in tow fees and other fees. But yeah, I think there's still three boat ramps that are open: the Marina, Whiskey, and Reno boat ramp. So just play by the rules and you'll have a great day.
Yeah, I mean, the options are still there. It may take a little longer, more people launching, mm-hmm. but there aren't that many people going out on the water right now.
No. It's, I mean, now that we're past the big holiday weekends and kids are back in school, mm-hmm. People are stomping around in the high ground for elk and antelope and deer and all that kind of stuff. So there's just less people out there doing it. So, I mean, you're going to have a great day regardless. There's plenty of boat ramps available.
You know, it was promising to see, you know, we're talking about a bird hunting very soon here, duck and goose, that opens in a little bit, and the mm-hmm. sage grouse, that opens, I think, 2 weeks maybe, for like 10 days right. or something like that. But we were driving around looking for elk over in 48 last weekend, and a whole covey of quail like just came up, and I'm like, man, I wish this was 2 days from now. It'd be legal to shoot that. But it's good to see that there are a lot of, you know, promising opportunities for people, even if they didn't get that elk draw or antelope draw.
Yeah, you know, I got up in the backside of Muddy Mountain and walking through some of that prairie and in the hills, and blue grouse just, you know, scared the bejesus out of you. You know, it's like but after the first one comes up, you're like, okay, there's probably more around here. And yeah. I think on Monday I think I kicked up 14.
Wow.
It was kind of neat, kind of fun.
Yeah.
And you know, I was sitting on a water hole in the morning for a while, and I had high hopes because, man, the birds were using it. A couple of blue grouse came in, and they used it. And then a big old turkey vulture flew in and sat there on the shoreline, and he played around in the water. And I'm like, man, if we just get one elk to come down and do all this. I mean, but it was really neat just sitting there and, you know, out of cell phone coverage and just sitting there watching the wildlife. It was kind of a neat morning.
It is an opportunity. And I know there are a lot of people that, you know, they can't hunt in a lot of places because they don't have access. And I know that's kind of been a problem for a lot of guys that are drawing antelope tags and not have any permission to mm-hmm. hunt there. But, you know, the bird shooting is going to really heat up here very soon. And you actually did a clay shoot, which is always good to do right before mm-hmm. bird season.
Yeah, we in fact on Friday night we had our first clays for the Braves.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so we got out there to Riverbend Roosters and shot around with the guys out there for a little bit and kind of brushed up the skills a little bit. And then Friday morning the SIR shoot, they had their big service industry representative shoot up there at the Sporting Clay Center up there above the fairground or the event center. So yeah, I mean a lot of guys have been in and out shooting doves. You know, I mean. We've had some pretty good doves in the area. Normally, you know, it's that typical, we get a cold front, you know, August 28th and the birds all go south. But talked to some guys that have had some pretty good successful days out in the field dove hunting. So lots to do.
You know, we've talked about this a lot over the last few years about, you know, you can't really complain about not having anything to do, but, you know, people always will complain because mm-hmm. they didn't get that draw. But obviously following the rules is one of those things that's going to, you know, make sure that everyone, you know, gets to play for a lot longer. And there's some people, I think, that are still trying to curtail all the rules and everything.
Yeah, I mean, and it's hard to keep track of them all. And, you know, unfortunately, Game and Fish is not printing as many copies of their regulations. So mm-hmm. they're really pushing hunters to go online and look at the rules and regulations. So, I mean, you and I sit here and look at our calendar, and I've got all the duck season opens, duck yeah. season closes, goose season opens, you know, dove season's open, you know. And I just take a calendar and I kind of just put on all those opening dates because I want to make sure that I'm within my boundaries. And, you know, there's a lot of things I like to do, and all of a sudden, you know, a weekend day comes available, and I'm like, okay, we got Sunday. What's the weather going to be like? What are we going to do? Are we going fishing? Are we going hunting? Are we going to shoot birds? Or, you know,
it's a flip of the four-way coin, you know.
That's right.
Some of those, but make sure to go over and familiarize yourself with the regulations. Also, you can download them on your phone, I believe, PDF form mm-hmm. now. So you can't complain that you don't know the rules. Because they're there for you. Make sure you get over and check it out. And then come in here to Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. If you have questions about those, you know, they can give you any kind of updates or help you out.
We can certainly help you with the information that we have. And a lot of times we'll sit here and look it up with you.
Yeah. Get out here and check it out and get out and enjoy the field.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
And, you know, we love fishing on this show. It's part of the actual name of it, Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. And one of the organizations around that does great things for the trout population is Trout Unlimited. And we have Scott Novotny, who's on with us this morning. And, boy, we sure appreciate you coming on with us and everything that's done for trout through your organization.
Well, Drew, I'm glad to help out any way I can because it is a fantastic organization.
You know, the Wyoming has 12 different chapters of Trout Unlimited, and right here in our own backyard, the Gray Reef chapter, in my opinion, I mean, has to be one of the biggest and most active trout fisheries around the entire state, with Gray Reef and the Miracle Mile being so popular to not just people here in Wyoming, but all over the world.
This is one of the best fisheries in the country. Sometimes we don't like to brag about that too much because it's going to, people come flocking in, but I don't blame them because there's big fish, there's plenty of them, and they're pretty easy to catch. So it's a fantastic fishery through just where you mentioned the Gray Reef, Miracle Mile, the Meadows. The water's been a little high this summer, so it's kind of slowed down the wade fishermen. But that hasn't stopped the outfitters or folks with boats from getting on the river and catching a lot of fish.
Yeah, and it's been interesting, you know, because like you said, it's been a little higher than normal, but they're trying to push so much water through to get to all the other fisheries and reservoirs along the North Platte system. And the whole system itself is really interesting. And to know that there's a grassroots organization like Trout Unlimited that – it's kind of helping push forward the future of trout here in Wyoming. And I know that over the last, oh, I don't know, near 30 to 35 years, the trout game here has really picked up. And you had mentioned there are people all over the country that want to come fish here. And can you give us an idea of why that may be so important?
Well, it's important to the economy. You know, they come and stay in motel rooms, campgrounds, hit the restaurants, spend some money downtown Casper. So it brings in so many more people that normally, like you said, probably 20 years ago, wouldn't be coming to Casper, Wyoming to fish the North Platte. So it's really a boost to the economy.
When you guys are, obviously it's always an opportunity if someone is looking to become part of Wyoming Trout Unlimited. And again, I said 12 different chapters. So there are plenty of options, especially with the Gray Reef chapter here. And what are some of the things that the Trout Unlimited does to really help the trout industry?
Our whole mission is to conserve, protect, and restore North America's cold water fisheries and their watersheds. We've got 300,000 members. I'm not sure how many members we have in Wyoming altogether, but like you said, we do have 12 chapters. TU nationally, they've worked on millions of miles of cold water across North America, and it's one of the most effective cold water fisheries conservation organizations in the country. And our local chapter, Gray Reef, is proud to be part of that program. You know, we have our local chapter, we've got about 120 members. They're consisted of men, women, teenagers. Some of the stuff that we do, would you like to hear about some of the stuff that we do as a chapter?
Yeah, absolutely.
Every year we support the Kids Free Fishing Day over there at Harry Estes Pond. It's usually between 350 and 400 kids. We help them learn how to catch fish, bait a hook, bait a worm. We do some fly casting lessons if they would like to give that a try. We also sponsor Trout in the Classroom, which I know you mentioned. It's teachers and students, they raise trout from eggs to fingerlings over the course of a semester. And it helps the students understand and appreciate the aquatic world. There were in Wyoming last year, I think there were 28 schools that participated, and they had approximately 1,500 students. Our schools that participated were St. Anthony's School, sponsored and led by Mick Novotny, and Journey Elementary, spearheaded by Marion Eisenman, I believe her last name. Sorry about that. You know, what they're trying to do now is, with the Trout in the Classroom, is that the Game and Fish is trying to do combined efforts with Trout Unlimited and with the Trout in the Classroom, but they're also trying to bring in archery and hunter safety, into the schools. Every year we participate in the Platte River Revival that they have it every year since its inception. Made the fishery and the parkway through the city of Casper just a fantastic fishery, and also a recreational area with whitewater rafting and bicycling and all that kind of stuff. And we also helped out with an outdoor rec club at Journey Elementary, where we taught knot tying. We did some fly tying with the kids, fly cast, and we had about 12 to 15 kids that participated in a kind of an outdoor club that they had over there at Journey Elementary.
What I love about an organization like this is you mention kids a lot. Getting the kids involved when they're young is going to ensure that really continues organizations like Trout Unlimited. I mean, I know kids that are 6, 7, 8 years old, and, you know, you're talking Journey Elementary and a lot of elementary kids are getting involved with this. They're the next wave of the future for outdoor men and women, and whether it's hunting or fishing, and that progress rolling along and keeping the kids involved is so important, especially to what we have here in Wyoming. I mean, it's a walk out the back door and cast a line in the river if you live that close. So it's fun that you guys really are focusing on the young to keep that journey going.
Yeah, we especially have to do that with Trout Unlimited, because I'll be perfectly honest with you, our membership, you know, is a little bit on the older side, and in order to keep going as a viable organization, we need to bring young people, females, people of color, broaden the spectrum of our membership. So that's one of the goals, national goals of Trout Unlimited. When those kids get done raising those fish, you know, that they watch for, it's about 2 or 3 months, and they see them go from the egg sac all the way to a fingerling, they went over to Harry Estes Pond, and they had about, I know St. Anthony's had about 50 kids from the school that came out and released them. And to see the smiles on those kids' faces when those little fish get released, that they each think, that fish is my fish, you know. So when it swims away, they get a feeling of accomplishment. And, you know, I totally agree with you. We got to get these young people involved. We got to get them outdoors. You know, with the age of electronics and stuff like that, you know, a lot of split families, they don't have dad to take them out or an uncle to take them out. Not that moms can't take them out. Don't get me wrong on that, because they can do a great job at that. But, you know, to mentor some of these kids and get them out there, you know what they say is the tug is the drug. And so if they're out there fishing and feel the tug on that line or see that bobber go down, a lot of times those kids will be hooked for life, and not just fishing, but supporting the cold water conservation in our country.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you that if maybe you're a family and you want to get your family involved, it's very simple. WyomingToYou.org is where you can go find out all the information of how to become members, what programs are available, what things are being done by Wyoming Trout Unlimited, but not just Wyoming, but worldwide or nationwide. This is a great organization to really get out and enjoy. Scott, I know for you to be involved in an organization like this, you like to get out and cast that line a little bit. Do you have any tips for folks that may be trying to get some fall fishing in?
Well, if you're going to wade, that water goes down, because, you know, wading in that that water when it's moving that fast, difficult to see some of the rocky areas. Just be careful. I think the fall fishing, in my opinion, is the best time of year to fish in Wyoming. You know, the water cools down, the fishing pressure backs off a little bit, and just get out there, give it a try. Don't give up. I do want to say that one thing, but so I don't skip it, that Trout Unlimited is not just limited to fly fishermen. It's spin casters. It's people that just believe in cold water conservation. It's some people, they've never casted a fly, and they don't care if they ever do, but they believe in cold water conservation. So there's a lot of room in our organization, a lot of people to help support the effort. But I'd say get out there. I'd wait a little bit myself. But you know how the weather goes in Wyoming. If you wait, one day it's great, and the next day we got 12 inches of snow. Although you can fish the river when it's cold, because it's a tailwater coming out of Gray Reef Dam. You know, that's a section of the Gray Reef stays open almost all year round for fishing.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned that it's not just fly fishermen that can be part of this organization, because the fly fishing to some people is a little bit intimidating. It's if you didn't grow up doing it and you're just trying to learn, it's a tough one. But if you're out and you're just wanting to be involved in, you know, keeping this push forward for trout in the cold water fisheries, I think it's a great opportunity. It doesn't hurt to just get more information, right?
No, not at all. And you know, there's a ton of information out there at TU.org all about the projects they've done. You know, they've helped support some of the dam removal on the Klamath River in Oregon. It's really kind of interesting to see all the different activities that TU statewide and national are involved in. It's really fantastic.
Definitely. If you have not checked into it, go to the Wyoming page. It's WyomingTU.org. There are 12 different chapters. So, you know, if you have friends all over the state, and get them all involved. They don't have to be right here in Gray Reef. They can be anywhere around the state. So, Scott, we sure appreciate you chatting with us today, and thanks for all that you guys are doing to keep the fisheries the popular and sound as they are.
Yeah, Drew, and one other closing comment. We're always looking for new members, and we also have a Facebook page.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.